This is Outside In, a show about the natural world and how we use it. I'm Sam Evans Brown. Dr. Max Liberon studies plastic pollution.
So most people know at this point that there's plastics in pretty much every environment you look in, from Mars to the bottom of the ocean, but it's really uneven in all those places.
Max is an associate professor of geography at Memorial University in Newfoundland.
And so my job is to look at the specific plastic profile in Newfoundland and Labrador, the Canadian province I work in. It's a big fishing industry. There's a lot of sustenance food hunting and fishing. And the plastic is very unique here, and so is our environment and our shorelines.
The scale of plastic pollution in the ocean is immense. Plastic can choke or entangle animals. It can break down to microscopic sizes and release pollutants as it degrades. Plastic is also eaten by all manner of marine life, including fish, who can then be caught and eaten by humans. We don't really know how all this plastic is changing the ocean and impacting our bodies. But when Max set out to study plastic pollution in Newfoundland in 2014, there was this moment on the coast that for them called into question the basic principles of the scientific method. A moment which brought into focus the degree to which science can have a point of view. And a moment which, in 2020, Max ended up writing about for Orion magazine. Here again is our producer, Justine Paradise, speaking with Dr. Max Liberon.
Yeah, can you tell me about the shores and landscape of Newfoundland and specifically the research site that you were talking about?
So Newfoundland and Labrador is a province with two parts, and the island of Newfoundland is nicknamed the Rock. And so our shorelines are rocks, cliffs, not even gravel. Sometimes gravel if we're lucky, but sometimes just sheer rock. There's occasionally sand that's gotten swept up from somewhere, and then if you go into Labrador, that's ice and more rock. Right, so there's sometimes sandy beaches here and here, but the vast majority are these black, pointy, shiny, frozen rocks. And I wrote a piece for Orion about one little, they're called tickles here, like sort of appendixes that come in, like these little tiny bays that come in. So you'll hear like black tickle and provolar tickle. And anyway, the gut is a tickle. No one calls it tickle gut, or they just call it the gut. But it's basically this little appendix of water that comes right into the edge of town. There's still some people who have traditional fishing stages, which are like fishing shacks that stand in the water on stilts and are half on land, half in water, and people bring their boats up and their catches in. And because I can get to it with public transit, and because it's still a fishing area with water coming in from the Atlantic Ocean, we do a lot of our research tests there, like, will this work? We'll try it in the gut. And that is one of the first places I went when I got my job here several years ago. And I had been trained in the standardized method for looking for small plastics, microplastics on shorelines. There's one put out by the United States, and there's another one put out in the European Union. They're almost identical. And what you do is you scoop sand and sieve it. And there was no sand. There wasn't even tiny gravel, right? There were boulders and sheer rock and ice. And I was like, do I have to quit my job? I can't. Do I make science that doesn't make sense with any other science? What do I do? And I ended up working with a group of brilliant people, including someone named Jess Melvin, where she's gone to different parts of the province and finds the same problem. And they did this huge study where they looked at all the different published publications, scientific publications about marine plastics on shorelines. That's 361 studies, well over 3,000 research sites. Only 4% of them talked about not sand. And that's everything from like little gravel to boulders, right? So the whole coarse sediment generally. But the world has way more than 4% not sand beaches, right? So we were like, oh my God, the scientific community doesn't know anything about beaches that don't look like resort beaches. They don't know anything that don't look like San Francisco. How is this possible? How is it that we have a global knowledge on plastic pollution without global landscapes?
Yeah, well, what does that say about how plastics pollution science, like, sees the coast, quote unquote?
So it's interesting because, so there's very little standardized methods in plastic pollution research because it's a brand new field. And that's whenever a new field kicks off, everyone's what you call the cold water cowboy. People are trying things that work and they're not standardized. The one place in our field that is standardized is shoreline plastics, because these two government agencies from the EU and the United States made them. And this is the SAND protocol.
Why do you think the focus was on sand? Why do you think that happened?
So I don't know why the focus was on San, but there are several possibilities. One is that, so the standardized methodology came from a core group of people, right? There are people's names attached to this. They're on the authors list. There are like six of them. Maybe they lived in a place where there was sand. Or maybe they lived in a place that had sand and other things, and they're like, oh yeah, sand is easier. Because the sand way of doing it is much closer to how other sediment analysis happens. In other sort of scientific disciplines, right? You put things in a sieve and you shake them and they stratify. You can't do that with giant rocks. And it might have been just the cultural bias for sandy places. Where do you want to research? Would you like to research on a cold cliff or would you like to research on this beach? Well, for some reason, we keep researching on the beach, right? That's also like, so most research is done in the summer. Even in places that have more than one season, we have fair weather science because where do you want to carry your gear? Do you want to carry it over ice in a blizzard or would you like to go with your, you know, beach towel? Well, most people are like beach towel, please.
Yeah. It's like a vacation mentality.
Well, it's just nice to do science for 12 hours when it doesn't suck outside. I mean, I can't blame people for that.
Yeah, but you get it.
But as understandable as the possible motivations for fair weather science might be, Max found that the sand protocol ended up shaping the research.
In these papers that we're reviewing, people will be like, yeah, it was a huge rocky beach and we found the one place with sand, or like there was snow and we dug around it, or, you know, like, because there's no protocol for how to deal with not sand. And so I think there's an anxiety. Scientists have an anxiety, a professional anxiety, where if you can't replicate something, the phantom of it not being valid is very real, right? And so they'll do these tricky moves and these jerry rigs and these weird put together things so that they can replicate something, even if the replicant doesn't represent their environment, because otherwise your science becomes questionable. And can you publish this? Can you compare it? What does it even mean? So there's this call for standardization, but we're worried that it'll be standardized to very specific environments, and places like Newfoundland and Labrador and the Arctic where I work will be left out of those standards because we're not the primary imagined landscape in which, you know, knowledge takes place.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about this principle of standardization because as I understand it, you know, one of the principles in science is repeatability. So you develop a standard methodology that can be repeated so the results can be compared to different areas or different time periods.
Bingo.
But you kind of question the purpose of standardization and the worldview it sort of suggests. So what do you see in this principle? What about standardization do you question?
So you perfectly described like the principle of replicability in science, right? You do it the same way so that no matter where or when you do it, you compare it with other results. You can tell whether things are changing. The problem is that assumes a universality, that the landscape stays the same and you can actually do that same thing in all the seasons, in all the places, and seasons and places don't actually allow that. So that comes at, I mean, I wrote in Orion, I wrote the piece about this idea of a universal landscape or a universal context where the details might change, but the essence doesn't. That comes out of Western thought, right? Starting with the ancient Greeks, talking about like the essential property of things, gets a big bump in the Enlightenment with replicability and what we would now call Western science or modern science. And it's still very much with us if we're a Western trained scientist.
In their article for Orion, Max wrote, "What would it look like to move away from practices that make environments into terra nullis, blank slates for scientific desire, regardless of whether those desires are environmentally or industrially benevolent? How can we adapt research so it does not have to resemble laboratory conditions or beach resorts to be valid?"
There are lots of ways of knowing that don't rely on universalism, but my job does, right? The science that I practice in my job does rely on it at a university. So we've tried to say like, okay, there's a type of monitoring and a type of comparing. And yes, especially if with pollution research, you have to compare now to before and now to the future. You have to tell whether pollution's getting worse or not. But what if you only do that for this province? What if you only do that for the places that matter here as opposed to the places that matter globally, which, if you think about it, don't exist, right? There's no universal we. That's impossible. There's no single way to be concerned about pollution or to be harmed by plastics or to use the ocean or to be dependent on the ocean, right? There's no universal way. So what if we did replicable local science, right, instead? And so that's what we've started doing, because actually we don't have a choice. We can't do universal science here. I have located one beach on this entire island, you know, island of Newfoundland, that is sandy, and it's a tourist beach, and it's not where people fish, and we care about plastics in our fish, so it's sort of a stupid beach for me to monitor anyway. Although I have, because it was sandy, and I was like, thank God I can monitor here. So I have the data, but we actually haven't processed it because no one needs that data, it turns out, right? The first few months I came here, I was like, where's the sandy beach? And everyone pointed in the same direction. I sampled it, but nobody cares.
It's like it changes who the science is for.
Yeah.
When you approach it differently.
Yeah, so I bet I could publish that Sandy Beach study, but it means I'd be wasting my time in terms of people who need the research here. And this is an ocean-dependent province. We eat out of the ocean, we live on the ocean, so I need to do better, right, than just publishable replicability.
That was Dr. Max Liberon speaking with Outside In producer Justine Paradise. Max is an associate professor of geography at Memorial University in Newfoundland and author of the book Pollution is Colonialism, which is due out in May.